Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Thursday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Cold front came in last night. Nice little storm went through the area. You love it, huh? As a Wisconsin guy, you like the cold front coming through?
Let me tell you something. There's a big difference between being a Wisconsin guy, if you see the weather back home this week, and liking a little chill in the air every now and then. I mean, with as hot as it is for most of the year around here, it's refreshing sometimes in the month of January to have a little chill in the air as Brandon shakes his head at me, Mr. Michigan guy.
Yeah, December and January to me, you should be like in the 40s and 50s.
No, yes. Stop it. Give me, I like when the winters, my first winter here seemed to be all in the 60s. Let's keep it there.
Well, you don't like wearing a hoodie and jeans or what? Like,
I wear a hoodie in 60s.
He wears that when it's 100.
Well, it's always, hold on, it's always a little chilly in this studio.
Is that what you're going to blame it on?
I don't wear a hoodie like around the house.
No, but in the office, when it's 100,
yeah, 40s, it is not 100 50s. Here.
40s and 50s
outside,
to me.
On the way to the office, if it's 100, if you're wearing a sweatshirt, has that ever happened?
No, I put it on when I get here.
That's a lie.
No, there's no way he's wearing a sweatshirt in the summer as he's walking into the studio with the humidity and the feels
we'll
like
see.
At 100. There's no
chance. A year
chance.
Ago, we were not doing the show together. We'll see next summer.
Man, I don't think I wear a hoodie anywhere. Like, I wear hoodie seasons like 2 months in the city of Houston.
You don't wear a hoodie anyway. You wear nothing but half.
That's not true. I wear hoodies all the time. I have a Rockets hoodie. I have a Nike hoodie. I have a black U of H hoodie. I have a Houston basketball hoodie.
I don't need
hoodie.
Inventory of your closet. I've worn four of those, especially to the station, are half zips.
I've worn four of those in the last 30 days. You're not paying attention. You're not paying enough attention to me, Joel.
Well, you're paying too much attention to your own wardrobe, planning it out like that and being able to rattle off what you've worn.
I don't think that's that's a very normal thing, right? Like, can you name off your hoodies? Absolutely. Like, how many hoodies do you have?
You don't want to know.
I can easily. I have 4 or 5 hoodies. I can tell you every single one that I have.
25 hoodies probably or more.
Well, there you go. So you're taking inventory yourself.
No, you asked, and if I had to guesstimate based on where I keep them
in
my closet.
A lot of hoodies.
I got a lot of clothes all over the place.
You need to scale back. You need to get rid of some of that. How many hoodies do you have, Brendan?
Why don't you and my wife have lunch? Because that you can have that as one of the topics of conversation. Like, my topic of conversation between her and her mom, whenever mom comes into town, too, she's like, you know, Joel, you should probably go through your closets. You can weed some stuff out. You know what? You guys should probably stay the hell out of my closet so then you don't have to worry about it. As long as it's not overflowing, it's not messy, it's not coming out into the bathroom and other rooms in the house, don't worry about what's in my closet. I don't go nitpick yours.
Who has more clothes, you or Lisa?
It's a push.
Wow, that's terrible. She's a TV woman.
No, she probably has.
She should have far more than you.
No, she probably does.
The fact that it's even a question, like I'm doing some serious judging right now. The fact that it's even a question that you have as much clothes as your TV anchor woman wife is alarming to me.
I would say that that's probably a false statement because of all the dresses and other things she has. But when I'm trying to think of like how many closets she consumes in our house with dresses and work clothes and other things, she has more, but my closet is, well, you know what? When I was working for the Rockets and I had between business casual and also suits, I still have quite a bit.
All right. Fair enough. 713-780-ESPN. Are you judging Joel as much as I am? 713-780-3776.
I still don't care.
And vice versa. You're talking about my hoodie and 3/4 zips. Kevin O'Connell season now for the Houston Texans. The latest and greatest who the Texans could be interviewing as their head coach. I keep wanting to call him Kevin Connolly, by the way. You know who Kevin Connolly is? He was E in Entourage. Yeah. They kind of look alike a little bit, too, except Kevin O'Connell is like a taller version of him. Only 36 years old, a little bit of a background on the guy because I took the deep dive. He played high school basketball along with football. He was high school teammates with Chase Budinger. So a little bit of a connection to the city
now
of Houston.
Now a big professional volleyball player, the ex-Rocket.
Is he playing volleyball now? I remember he played collegiately, or it was like a big-time like volleyball player, prep volleyball player. Where do you play volleyball professionally?
Oh, no. There's the, I forget, it's like the ATP, but it's the professional volleyball league.
That's awesome.
And you know, ESPN, a lot of times when they're looking to fill programming, either on the Deuce or otherwise, they'll have the, you know, the two-on-twos and the beach volleyball championships. He's in it. He's always up there towards the top too, because you know what? Remember he was in the dunk contest one year.
Yeah,
he tried to
unbelievable.
He tried to do the white man can't jump. He dressed like Woody Harrelson's character and did all that. But yeah, once he got done playing hoops, he went right over. And you know, you can make coin like with your endorsements with sunglasses and all those other things. And so I think he's doing pretty good financially on that tour.
So is he? He's playing beach volleyball.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Hopefully we'll see him in the Olympics someday.
I was thinking about that, too.
Yeah, I wonder if he'll be an Olympian.
Can you do it like the NBA? That's a question maybe we know or we can find out or Brendan can look it up. Can you be a professional beach volleyball player and still compete in the Olympics?
My guess would be yes, but I don't know that for sure. And it's a good question because of the amateur stuff always comes into play with the Olympics. Back to Kevin O'Connell, Rams offensive coordinator. I guess I should have said that to lead with. Four-year captain at San Diego State. He was a quarterback. He was actually drafted in the third round by, you guessed it, New England when Nick Caserio was there. It's weird that he was drafted, though, in the third round in 2008 when Tom Brady was there. And then he got cut the very next preseason. Could you imagine that? Like, if you cut a rookie third rounder the following year during the preseason, it'd be like cutting Davis Mills going into the preseason next year. I found that to be kind of weird, but it doesn't at all affect, like, his coaching prowess. Has coached in the NFL since 2015. Stops in Cleveland, San Francisco, Washington, and the Rams. What were some thoughts you saw whenever Kevin O'Connell entered the chat in the Texans head coaching search?
Well, based on our never-ending chats that we have as a show off the air, as we were discussing it via the keyboard, the first thoughts that popped into my head were basically, here we go again with another guy that gets a title, but that doesn't call the plays. So we know, like we were talking about, and I went back to the Green Bay example with McCarthy. You know, McCarthy was calling the plays, but Aaron Rodgers was changing all of them. But then when you look at it, at how many other locations when we have offensive-minded head coaches, are you third in line? You might be the Nathaniel Hackett right now is the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. Matt LaFleur calls the plays. Aaron Rodgers changes them. So you're basically third in line. But he's interviewing all over the place, as is the quarterback coach for the Packers for head coaching jobs. So if you look at this potential hire, you look at a guy that's working under Sean McVay. Sean McVay is that offensive genius mind that, you know, much like Kyle Shanahan, is revered around the league as being the premier offensive play caller, one of them in the league. So then what are you getting? The scraps? Are you getting the Nick Caserio of offensive coordinators? Because hopefully through osmosis and through just being around Sean McVay and seeing what he does, that when you get the opportunity, you can do what he does. I'm curious, but I don't think it's the right fit for the Houston Texans right now.
I have a couple of – he's really young, too, 36 years old, and I know that the NFL is getting younger and younger for that position, but that's very young to be a head coach in the NFL. The offensive coordinator, like you mentioned, not calling plays. Is that a negative versus a positive? I've been on the opposite side, I think, of the majority of the people out there. Oh, you need a coordinator. You need a guy calling plays. I don't necessarily need that for my head coach. I think there's many examples around the NFL where dudes aren't calling plays on either side of the ball and they have success. And also, like my read on the situation is that Nick Caserio doesn't necessarily need that either. David Culley certainly wasn't. And if you listen to him in the press conference and you believe what he says that that's not something that they're necessarily looking for. They value leadership over the X's and O's.
But I just think that you're looking at a guy. Well, we scrutinized David Culley for a lot of reasons, but one of them was he was never even a coordinator, let alone considered for a head coaching job. So now you're looking at a guy that's a coordinator but doesn't call the plays, but he's being considered for a head coaching job. I only put him a half step above Culley simply because he had the title, but he didn't do what the job basically tells most people you're supposed to do. So I don't think that's the right fit for the Houston Texans because, as we mentioned, because Nick Caserio swung and missed so badly on Culley, you can't say, I'm going to get a guy for a couple of years like you were planning to do with Culley and then get your real long-term head coach.
You got to get it right now, and that therefore, I don't think that's the right call.
This has to be your ride or die.
Yeah.
It absolutely has to be your ride or die. With Nick Caserio, you're hitching your wagon to this guy, in a large part because you are on your second head coach. Not many GMs get three head coaches, and they shouldn't get three head coaches. If you're missing that badly on two that quickly into your career, you should absolutely not get a third head coach in. So this is your ride or die. Why do you value the coordinator position so much, though? Like the play calling specifically, because Kevin O'Connell is the offensive coordinator but isn't calling the plays. McVay is the one calling the plays. I don't look at those jobs as parallels at all. Like, I don't think what you do as a coordinator is something that you need to do as a head coach. And a lot of people will have the opposite viewpoint. Why do you think you should be a play caller before you're a head coach?
Because I think you need, before you get to a CEO role where you can make decisions across the board and be involved in decisions across the board and how you run your football team on a game day or a practice day or any other day, you need to have those life experiences. You need to be a part of that. You need to be on, have your finger on the pulse of every situation. You know, the third and longs, the 2-minute drills, the Mike McCarthy, everywhere where Mike McCarthy screws up. You want to
you
have.
You don't think he has control of that? Or not control, I should
no,
say,
I don't.
But his hand on the pulse of it?
No,
you
I think
don't. He's just like an observer?
I think he's probably a little bit more glorified than an observer, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think he carries a ton of pull in terms of, you know, we talked about with other coaches where they said you always had someone that was somewhere around the building that was your voice of reason that you could sound things off of. Maybe he's that guy for McVay. Maybe. I don't know. But because of the way they're structured and what we know about who's actually making decisions and calling plays, I don't feel like he's in a prominent enough role to suddenly be elevated to a head coach and then feel comfortable about him being able to do the things that we found out David Culley was very incapable of doing.
I think it's a great point on the game day management, like, because if you're not living it, then it's something you're not getting reps in, unless you play Madden, like Brendan suggested a few weeks ago, that anybody who's played Madden knows how to handle a 2-minute drive. But going into the deep dive and doing the prep on this, Sean McVay does say that Kevin O'Connell has a big influence on the Rams offense, but it's usually in the prep. It's in the buildup. It's during the week, not necessarily so much on game day. There was a positive and a negative that I noticed with Kevin O'Connell. You want the positive or the negative first? What side do you want? All right, fine. I watched him mic'd up with him whenever he was with Washington. He was very low energy to me. Like, it was like, good ball. That was a good throw. I don't know if I want that in a head coach. I don't know if I want the low energy from a head coach. Like, I want somebody with some fire. I like the Sean McVay who has the fire, even though I didn't love him celebrating in the end zone. I like that energy. I feel like the energy is something that bring in.
I love that.
Sure, okay, fine. We have disagreement there, but it's not really pertinent to this conversation. Like, I want the energy, and the fact that I saw low energy out of him was a little bit of a red flag to me.
That's fine. I mean, do you want Brendan's guy that has the 88 ounces of caffeine every day, Dan
Campbell?
Here's
Brendan's guy. I like Dan Campbell. Here's my take on Dan Campbell. I like Dan Campbell. I don't know if I'd want Dan Campbell to be my head coach, though. I like watching Dan Campbell be the head coach of one of the 32 NFL organizations. I wouldn't want it to be the team that I watch every day.
I think Dan Campbell emulates the kind of guy you want as your strength coach. But I also think that, you know, if you could find the happy medium between the two and get a guy that has the juice and has energy, you know, whether we get to it or not later in the show, but the one thing where this comes up again is Mike McCarthy, who 2 days after the debacle in Dallas said that he saw in the locker room his guys were nervous.
He said he was nervous.
And then got later into that. But then when pressed on the calling his team nervous, he tried to walk it back and say they were anxious. Okay, well, it's part of a head coach's job to be able to emulate a certain aura about you of confidence so that it kind of gets into your players' heads as well, that you're going into this knowing you're going to kick their ass and that you just can't wait to get on the field because you're going to win and you are better than they are. And the fact that that's what worries me, right? I don't need you to be Dan Campbell, but I definitely need you to have enough juice and confidence that when you walk into a room, people are going to stop. When you start talking, they're going to listen. When you get put together a game plan or say, this is what we're going to do, you're going to go through running through a wall to try and do it for you.
Yeah, the lack of energy disturbed me, but I do have some positives and maybe enough positives where I'd have them as number one on my list of guys they've interviewed so far to this point. What are your early observations, Houston, on Kevin O'Connell? Could you be okay with Kevin O'Connell as the head coach of the Houston Texans? And of the guys they've already talked to, Brian Flores, Joe Lombardi, Vince's grandson, Hines Ward, Jonathan Gannon, now Kevin O'Connell, Who's at the top of your list? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, we'll tell you who's at the top of our list. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Of the current guys the Texans have talked to, have been interested in, who's at the top of your list? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HR&P listener line. Mike, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, man? I believe Eric Bieniemy, if I'm saying his name wrong, from the Kansas, should be the only guy considered right now. See, that he won a Super Bowl as an offensive coordinator, assistant head coach, and he's going to be in the playoffs and probably in the Super Bowl again. That's how I feel. Now, I could be wrong, but it seems like to me that's the guy for us, man.
Appreciate the call, Mike. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bee, 713-780-ESPN. Eric Bieniemy is one of the great mysteries in the coaching search because his resume would tell you that the dude should have been a head coach long before. I haven't seen anybody looking to talk to Eric Bieniemy in this coaching cycle. Not the Texans, not the Bears, not the Giants. No one that's looking for a head coach. The Broncos. Like, it doesn't seem like anybody's talking to Eric Bieniemy. I don't know if it's the past. I don't know if it's people look at that offense and say that's not an Eric Bieniemy joint. That's more of an Andy Reid thing. That's more of a Pat Mahomes thing. But Eric Bieniemy is just flat out not a sexy name this coaching cycle.
It's strange, and it does beg you to ask those kinds of questions because obviously there are still fans and callers out there that believe that he is the right guy for some job. Maybe it's not the Texans' job, but there is a job that he should be right for. If another guy under the Andy Reid tree was given the reins of the Chicago Bears enough to drive them into the ground, you would think that the tree isn't dead, that a guy that's had more success by hitching his wagon to Andy Reid, like Eric Bieniemy, no matter what happened in his past 2 decades ago, his recent history is a resume filled with Super Bowl appearances, working with one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, a young quarterback. And whether he calls all the plays or not, I think that more and more, because Andy Reid is one of those guys that wants to promote his guys, whether it be from within to his own team or to other teams, he's letting Bieniemy call more plays, be more involved in the offense. So I think that it is kind of puzzling to me, and I've asked this of you in the last couple of weeks, like, isn't it a little bit strange that this guy went from the top of everybody's list, and I guess, unfortunately, his team went too deep into the playoffs, but suddenly he's just been ghosted?
Yeah, he was interviewed by the Texans last year. He was somebody that the Texans talked to, and, I mean, they ultimately decided to go with David Culley. But, I mean, it's not like the Texans are the only people that are passing on Eric Bieniemy. This is a league-wide thing. And, again, he has a checkered past. I don't know if that's how much that comes into play with this. But also, I think, I mean, it's a fair assessment, too, that Bieniemy is not that responsible for the success of the Kansas City offense.
No, but you know what? You're looking at, as it relates to the Texans, right? You're looking at a team that has a young quarterback, and it's not Patrick Mahomes, but you want to find out truly what's the ceiling. What does this guy have, and does he have enough to either be a starter, a backup, or a star? And one guy that can at least try and put him through the motions so you can figure it out better is a guy that's worked with Patrick Mahomes, taking a guy right out of the college ranks, raw, and developed him, however the case may be, but he had a role in developing Patrick Mahomes. You would think he's got a pretty good grasp on quarterbacks to be able to say, hey, if we put him through practices and we run him through 11-on-11 and we run him through some of the things that we ran Mahomes through, there's going to be some either red flags or gold stars that are going to tell me exactly what I'm dealing with.
Well, he was never a quarterback's coach. I mean, he was the running back's coach. But
Mahomes is running his offense at practice.
His offense or Reed's offense.
I'm talking about at practice. He's involved with Andy Reid with the offense. So if they're at practice and Reed's all over the field doing whatever he's doing, the guy that's got his eye on every snap on the offensive side of the ball is going to see the positives and the negatives with whatever the quarterback's doing. It's like the Diners, right? Mm-hmm. Shanahan's not there for every play, but through his offensive coordinator and others, people saw that Trey Lance wasn't grasping it every day during practice, and that's why that they were desperate to keep Jimmy G on the field because they knew he wasn't ready.
Look, I'm nitpicking it, and I'm shocked that Eric Bieniemy doesn't have a head coaching job to this point. I'll be honest with you. 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HR&P listener line. Alex, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Alex,
hey guys,
up?
Yeah. So the perfect candidate for me was, I've always thought, Mike McDaniel. I've always been a fan of Kyle Shanahan, and I've always believed that he should have replaced Kubiak way back when he was OC here with the Texans. So Mike McDaniel should be somebody that they should look at.
Alex, I appreciate the call, and I'm so happy that you brought up the name Mike McDaniel. It's somebody that I've been monitoring as well. To the Shanahan point, I also like Kyle Shanahan. It would have been difficult for Shanahan to replace Gary Kubiak at the time that he did. When Shanahan went to Atlanta, though, and then was the hottest name in all of assistant coaches and all candidates whenever he went to the Super Bowl with Atlanta, I know he blew the 28-3 lead, but he was the hottest candidate on that coaching carousel. And this was around the same time that Bill O'Brien was like flirting with other teams. I was screaming at the highest of hills in the city of Houston, let Bill O'Brien go. See ya, Bill O'Brien. Thank you. And then go out and hire Kyle Shanahan. Obviously, they didn't. Even though the Texans went to the playoffs that year, I was wanting them to do that. Mike McDaniel is the most interesting assistant coach in college in the NFL. The offensive coordinator for San Francisco. The one downside is the same thing that we were talking about just a moment ago whenever we were discussing Kevin O'Connell, the offensive coordinator for the Rams. He's not the one calling the plays. Right. We know that. But again, like, where do you stand on how much that weighs? Mike McDaniel had the you might not know the name, but he was the dude yesterday that a reporter named Mike Jones asked him a question. He goes, "Who? Mike Jones?" And then McDaniel is just known for having all of this personality and being very cool. The one thing I heard about Mike McDaniel, and like he's this wizard, he's like a nerdy looking dude, like he's really sharp though, is that he wouldn't go to a state that didn't have legalized marijuana. So maybe that is hurting the chances of Mike McDaniel being a head coach of the Houston Texans.
Can you respect that?
I think I do, yeah.
You do?
Sure.
I can respect a guy who's like, this is an important fact. Like, I'm not going to just chase whatever job comes to me. This is something that's good. Like, he's got to be secure in himself to turn down NFL jobs for that.
Yeah. But there's still drug testing in the league, right?
I don't think so. I don't think they drug test coaches.
Not for that.
No.
Oh, I don't know. The NFL is so NFL that it wouldn't surprise me if they've had everybody on drug tests.
I'm not sure. But, I mean, Mike McDaniel is definitely like a guy you can see blazing it up. So he is the most interesting assistant coach in the entire NFL. I would be all on board for that. I don't even know if Mike McDaniel would work, but the entertainment he'd bring would be gold.
See, but you can't. Again, you can't afford to take that misstep or take that chance because of the fact that you've already misstepped with David Culley.
Well, what misstep? What do you mean?
Like, you can't take another risky hire for a head coaching position. You've got to be, like we said, you've got to make sure this is your guy, your ride or die.
Yeah.
So I think there's too many question marks associated with him as opposed to being a slam dunk candidate that you know when you hire him, he's going to be the right fit. He's going to do the right things. He has the right experiences so that you don't have to live through another Culley. And you also don't have to live through the scrutiny if he doesn't get it right away.
What candidate, though, or like guys that have interviewed or guys that have been like linked to this job or slam dunk candidates?
Well, Brian Flores is way more of a slam dunk candidate simply because of the fact he's been there, done that. And so just the fact that, you know, you can say that he didn't have a winning record overall, but his last two seasons, he went on good runs. He kept teams that had a chance to really tank and fall off the planet and just mail it in. Turned up the heat a little bit on him, got him to play good football, win consecutive games, get him on the cusp of winning the playoffs. You know, he's been there, done that. Now, you like we just said with any other candidate, did he make mistakes? Sure. Did he get along with the general manager? No. At the end of the day, that's what we heard. So that's what we're going to believe. But he has a lot of experience. And I also don't think they're done interviewing yet because there's the one.
No, they're not.
The one question that I keep asking that I asked you guys that I'm going to start asking more and more is, if you have free reign to interview anybody you want, and especially guys that are no longer in the playoffs, why the hell haven't you interviewed Jerod Mayo?
If he is for sure the guy, to me, it'd be the answer there is that why hurry it? Like, if they're that confident
why?
They're going to get Jerod Mayo,
they may snap him up.
But if they're confident they're going to get him and they're not worried about another team snapping him up because you have a good relationship with Mayo, and Mayo said, "I'm coming, just let's let this play out," for whatever reason, there's no need to hurry.
Well, you also have to make the formal request that you want to talk to him like the Raiders and other teams have. You also have to be leery of the fact that because of this reputation the Texans have, no matter what kind of a relationship you have with Nick Caserio and others, you have to realize, hey, look, if a job pops open that's got a ton of talent, and I'm just saying hypothetically now, right? If the Cowboys job came open,
yeah,
and you had all that talent on offense and all that talent on defense, you'd be an idiot, especially with Jerry Jones and his money and his propensity to just throw cash and contracts at whoever he really likes, that if the Cowboy job came open or a job that has a lot more talent on the roster came open and said, I'm going to give you job security, whatever the Texans are offering you, I'm going to give you more money and more years. We want you more. If I'm the Texans, I'm going to be really damn worried. That's why I don't like that philosophy if you're right about that. I need them to be already talking to him and going, hey, look, we need this to work.
The four guys that have interviewed for this job are Brian Flores, Joe Lombardi, Vince's grandson, Hines Ward, Jonathan Gannon, and now Kevin O'Connell. Because the most intriguing thing about Joe Lombardi, none of those guys call plays other than Joe Lombardi, the OC for the Chargers, and Staley being a defensive guy. Brian Flores, I'm not sure I'd have him higher on my list than Joe Lombardi. Like, I would take Jonathan Gannon and Kevin O'Connell ahead of Brian Flores like that. Like, you always point to the great second-half surge that they have, but they also were very poor coming out of the gates. I want no part of a dude that fired four offensive coaches. I want no part of a dude who fired four offensive line coaches. I want no part of a dude who's under 500 in 3 years in the NFL and has never been to the playoffs.
See, I knew you were going to go to that. But again, I'm going to the last 2 years.
But how's that a slam dunk?
When he was a huge success in the way he either turned them, he not only turned them around, but he had them in a position where they were winning multiple games in a row, and they were on a roll playing good football.
But the other side, they lost a bunch of games in a row to start.
He's in the middle of a quarterback controversy in his own building because of who they're force-feeding him to play that he didn't want to play.
I'm pretty sure
he wasn't
that,
a big Tua guy.
Sure, but he also played Ryan Fitzpatrick until he got hurt.
Right, because he wasn't a Tua guy.
Sure,
but he was
not
being
a Tua force-fed, guy.
But the general manager was forcing him to play the guy that he wanted him to play,
you
which could
be a
problem.
You think he'd be
the
a Davis Mills
guy? Same reason why I'm
a
Brian Flores fan, because of the fact that he's not going to just sit there and take it over and over on everything. When I said, when we were talking about McCarthy, I want a leader of men that walks in the locker room that has the respect of the locker room.
That fires everybody. He's
so
fired
what?
Four OCs.
Okay, your general manager can do it and it's okay, but your coach can't?
He hasn't fired four dudes.
Give him time.
Give him time to fire everybody?
Yeah, Casario might be on the same kind of role. But the fact of the matter is, at least you got a guy that's got some stones that is going to walk in and say, not necessarily my way or the highway, because Nick's made it very clear he's running things.
Stone, sure, but not stable. How can you win with four OCs in 3 years?
You've also gotten into the fact that, and we can get into more of this later. I'm just saying, you've gotten into the fact, too, that you hope, like even a Bill O'Brien, learns from his mistakes. So how do you know he's going to make them again? We don't know Flores is going to make the same mistakes, but at least you know he's got a relationship with the GM, but he's also not going to be rolled over like David Culley.
No, he wouldn't be rolled over like David Culley. I don't think anybody would. 713-780-ESPN. We got to make some room for Kevin McKell. Of course we will for Kevin McKell, former Rocket head coach, NBA great, basketball Hall of Famer. He joins us next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Apollo Men's Health again. Look, I'm a firm believer in Apollo Men's Health because they've changed my life. They can do the same thing for you. Men and women, it starts with hormone therapy. And with hormone therapy, there's many of different ways that you can get involved with it. But it gets you your energy back, gets you feeling like your younger, better self again. And it's really a great way that they are able to help you out. Essentially, there's multiple ways that you can have it administered, either going to the clinic weekly or you can do it at home and they can ship you the product and show you how to do it. Guys, there's cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy. You only got to go in every 6 months. But you get the same upgrade in energy level on a daily basis. They also, if you want to get on a workout program, have full body composition analysis. And it literally takes 60 seconds, but then every time you do it, you chart your progress, get the results, and see the kind of progress you're making towards gaining your athleticism back and getting your body fat to go down and checking all your vital statistics. You can also recover quicker with HGH peptide therapy. But Dr. O is the man who owns the clinics, and he knows what he's doing. And you're going to talk to him and realize, here's a guy that I have confidence in that I believe can help me get where I need to go. All it's do, get the process started. Go to ApolloMH.com. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. And more so than anything else, you're going to find out that they're going to take care of you every step of the way. You mentioned my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot. But go from there by showing up to your appointment with an open mind. They are going to take you through the process. If you give them honest answers, they're going to put you on a program that works. Two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. Check them out today. They're my good friends at Apollo Men's Health.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joining us now on the HRMP guest line, Kevin McKell, Basketball Hall of Famer, former Rocket coach. Thanks so much, Coach McKell, for making some time, taking a few minutes to talk with us. I wanted to ask you about this Lakers situation. They benched Russell Westbrook yesterday. He was not very happy for being benched in the final few minutes of the game. There's been rumors that Frank Vogel could be fired and made the scapegoat for the Lakers' failures so far. What's your read on that Lakers situation at this moment?
They've been so disjointed all year. You know, I think bringing in Russell Westbrook, I don't know. I'm not sure that was a great. He needs the ball in his hand. He's very ball dominant. Davis has been in and out. You know, LeBron is getting older. I know he's kind of fight everything imaginable up to this point as far as his career and what he's able to do this late in his career. But, you know, they just needed some more good role players that could play off of Davis and LeBron. And I'm not sure that Russ having the ball. I mean, you know, Russ sat the last 4 minutes of the game last night. And, you know, Vogel was like, yeah, I'm not playing him. And I've often said this, you know, when you shoot a poor percentage, you either can't shoot or you're taking bad shots. And there are nights you look at what the Lakers shoot from the field and you go like, okay, they're just taking bad shots, and they're taking a bunch of them. And you can't live like that. I mean, you know, hey, this is my old team, the Celtics, same thing. I mean, I watch them play sometimes, and I'm saying, okay, those guys aren't bad shooters, but good Lord, they're shooting horrendously for the year. That means you're taking bad shots. As a good player, the ball didn't come to you late in the shot clock. You're going to have to take the bad shot just because the clock gets squeezed to you, and you don't throw the clock. You don't throw the ball to your worst, you know, to your worst player late in the clock. Throw it to your best player. See if you can create something, and hopefully he can make a tough shot. But you can't live on that. So right now, I think the Lakers are really funky. And, of course, they'll blame Vogel for it. But I think it's much more of the mix of their team and kind of where they're at. AD has been great, you know, when he can play, but he hasn't had a rhythm. They're just flat-out funky. And their record shows it.
Yeah, Coach. And the thing is, when you think about it, you look at the guy that's supposed to change everything when you start looking at the general manager, but then you know that LeBron James is the general manager. So LeBron had a chance in the offseason, you know, to go a different direction, and they had plenty of guys that were going to be signed up to give him a supporting cast. And instead, you know, he and Russ got together, and Russ was going to be the guy in the homecoming and the Cinderella story. And you and I, we all have seen what Russell Westbrook is as a Rocket and otherwise. We know who he is. He's ball dominant. He's not a good shooter. You know, yet he has to have the ball in his hands. That's what LeBron does. It just seemed like it was a situation for disaster right from the jump.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, LeBron thought all of a sudden he was going to turn into a spot-up shooter and play off Russ. But that's not what LeBron does. I mean, LeBron can make shots, but he's way more of a playmaker. He's a better decision maker. He's better at getting to the foul, getting to the rim than Russ is, and he's just bigger. Everything, LeBron should have the ball, even at this stage in his career. But if LeBron doesn't have it, in my opinion, then AD has got to have it when he's healthy. You got to get it to the elbows. You got to run some stuff. He is a willing passer, but you've got to run some actions that gives him an opportunity to look pass first, and then from the elbows and the mid-post, he's not really a low-post player. Let him go to work from there. And he'll make some threes, and he can get hot and stuff, but I just think their offense is bad. You watch them play, and you're like, yuck, that's just bad offense. And, I mean, hey, look, and I will tell you, and I hate this, I'm not saying there's 15 teams that I could probably name that I look at, and I go, yuck, that's bad offense in this league. They just relying on the three, just, you know, any three is a good, you know, you have a career 25% three-point shooter. And, you know, the guy goes, he's 1 for 9. Like, why is he shooting 9 times? He should be 1 for 2. And the rest of the time, driving, kick, and play. Just not enough guys know how to play basketball right now as far as getting your teammates shots. And, I know when I played, like, if you were a big guy and got the ball at the elbow and drove, and the guy came and attacked you, you were expected to make the play, just throw it to the open guy. And, that's just not that hard.
Coach, let's just change gears, go to the other side of the country, but also a situation you know well based on who's running everything over there. Daryl Morey, you had Embiid go for 50 last night, but he's still sitting on Ben Simmons. He set the price tag in the bar way too high early on, but now there's rumors that he might be willing to let Ben Simmons sit for a full season. Is that a big mistake? Because Embiid, basically in the prime of his career, playing his ass off, you know, you need to have complimentary pieces, and especially with a salary slot like that, you need to have help that he's not going to get if Daryl lets him sit.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is a bad move. I think that, you know, Daryl loves to play poker, and you know, he decided he got dealt two aces, he felt, you know, and all of a sudden he's sitting on that and just keeps raising and just you know, says, well, no, I'm not getting off my hand. I mean, he just said, I'm going to let Ben sit, which is stupid, I think, because they do need, and especially with Embiid's just history of being hurt. He's healthy, and you just got to say, man, we got to ride this guy because he's had a history really early in his career. He didn't play for that, what, first year and a half, 2 years. He's been hurt. He's healthy, and you got to say, man, I tell you what, a couple of pieces that you could get for Ben Simmons would really help because I don't think they need, you know, Embiid's kind of their dynamic guy. They can play through him, and they need good role players to play off of him. And let's face it, last year, you know, Daryl said it, and so did Doc Rivers. It's hard to have Ben Simmons out there in close playoff games because after the coach just decides, I will live and die with Simmons beating us, screw it. And they run Simmons' man off of Simmons over to Embiid, jam up the paint, and just say, Simmons, shoot as much as you want, which they do. They both said, I don't know if we can win with that. So if you can't win with that, get off it. I just think Daryl sometimes, you know, just like I said, he loves his Texas Hold'em, and he just is convinced he has the best hand, and that he's going to be able just to bluff everybody or just keep raising until someone gives him what he wants. But I don't see that happening, and I was shocked to see Simmons say, "Well, I'm okay sitting out the rest of the year or two." I was like, "Really?
Yeah.
In the prime of your career?" I you know what? This league baffles me at times, and right now we're going through a baffling period for me because I can't imagine in the prime of your career, with a chance to really win, because I don't think this year again that there's just a dominant team. Mm-hmm. I know Milwaukee, you know, won it last year. You know, got Antetokounmpo, a very good team. But man, if you're the Sixers, you got to say, you know, if you're Ben Simmons, man, I come back. I'm going to win a championship, and that championship will stay with you the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I end up doing a lot of head shaking more than anything else.
Deshaun Watson situation. I mean, Deshaun Watson sat out the whole year for the Houston Texans in the prime of his career as well. Now, there were some circumstances around that, certainly. How about the other side of that, though, from a Ben Simmons perspective? I'd like you to put your GM cap on for a second. Like, if you're somebody that's interested in Ben Simmons, you mentioned Daryl Morey is not going to be somebody that's going to, you know, lessen what he has in his hand. How willing would you even be to trade for a guy who's willing to sit out a whole year?
Yeah, I know, and you have to have the right team. Like Ben Simmons is not a fit for a lot of teams. Like I watched the Charlotte Hornets play last night against the Celtics. You know, Ben Simmons is not a guy that if he goes to Charlotte, he would mess up that mix. He has to have the ball in his hands. He has to have that drive. They got ball. They got four or five guys that put their head down, drive, make plays, attack the basket. You know, he doesn't fit there. And so there's a lot of teams you look at. You're saying, okay, I've got good. I got some good perimeter shooters. I've got some people that we can give the ball to in certain spots, and they can really be effective, but they don't need the ball all the time. So Simmons can have the ball, because if Simmons has the ball, he's effective passing, attacking, trying to get in the rim. And until it's late in playoff games, they just want to get fouled, free throws. So there's a lot of, I mean, I'm telling you, I like Ben Simmons overall for some teams, but honestly, there's a handful of teams I think he really fits well. And the rest of the league, I just don't think he fits. I really don't. I mean, so you're just not going to have as many people you think you would have dealing with Ben Simmons, an all-star, an all-defensive player in the league, that Daryl really thought he'd have 20 suitors. I would say that Daryl's probably got three or four teams that are really willing to do something. And I agree with you. I mean, do you really want a guy who says, I'm content to sit out?
We just got done talking about the fact that the mold has been set for people to look at as a negative. He's another Russell Westbrook because he can't shoot, but he needs the ball in his hands. And a lot of teams now are going to be scared off just simply because of that.
Yeah, no, I agree. As I said, there's only a few teams you look at and think, boy, we need a primary ball handler. We need a ball dominant guy that can get our guy shot, drive to the basket. And everybody's thinking, well, I'm surely going to get Simmons to be more aggressive at the end of the game. I mean, we'll talk to him. We'll do whatever we got to do. And I don't know. Like, if you kind of have that, that gene at the end of the game, like that you want it, and you're willing to get fouled, you're willing to shoot free throws, you're willing to attack the rim, you're willing to do all these things, and put yourself on the line to be the hero or the GOAT. And I really haven't seen that much out of Simmons. He defers a lot late in the game and really doesn't want the ball, and surely does not want to shoot it late in games and playoff games.
So he deferred a dunk shot to a kick out three in the playoffs. That's not a good sign either.
Agreed. I think that probably sums it all up. I agree. So anyway, Philly has a chance this year because I think the league is soft. But boy, I would, if I was Daryl, at some point I would just say, you know what, I'm moving this guy for what I can get, and then I'm moving on. And then just one less distraction. When you're a player in the league and someone's asking you all the time about someone who's not playing, mm-hmm. it irritates you. You know, like you just like after a while, you're like, I don't want to talk about that anymore. It's just, like, he's not playing, and just let's just move off it. So, it also is an irritant to the team.
All right, Coach, I got to ask you this before we let you go. Last question, but it's very pertinent right now too. There's rumors out there the Rockets are looking to trade either Eric Gordon and or Christian Wood, but they need a cornerstone future player in return. We just got done talking about Ben Simmons. Unless it's like Daryl willing to like totally try and fleece his old team, but also give up Ben Simmons. Who the hell is going to give up a player of that caliber for the two guys the Rockets are trying to move?
Nobody. I mean, you know, the best thing you might be able to do is get a good team that's got a low draft choice with somebody else. You get a team like a Milwaukee, I'm not saying Milwaukee, but it's a team with a good record that somehow, you know, a couple years ago got a draft choice and it's going to be a top five pick. And you trade him and throw that top five pick and you say, okay, you know, we're going to bank on that top five guy being a cornerstone player. You are not getting cornerstone players for Gordon and Woods. That ain't happening. No. Who's going to do that? You know what I mean? Especially if you're talking cornerstone and you're the Houston Rockets, you're talking young player, huge, huge upside, maybe hasn't realized it yet. But I mean, there's some parameters that you're talking about as you're talking cornerstone player for the Houston Rockets, and no, I don't see anybody doing that. And again, I don't see how, Rafael can think that he's going to get that for Woods, who's been, you know, he's a nice player, and Eric Gordon is at the end of his career. Really, I don't see that happening. Your best shot is that you can get, you know, a pick off of a good team that has a pick, and he ends up being something. But no, you know, I mean, they're just not going to say, oh, fantastic. You know, we'll trade you Ball, you know, for your Charlotte for those two. That just isn't going to happen.
That's great,
Coach. Great stuff as always. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Good luck. Talk to you later. Bye bye.
Kevin McHale, Pro Basketball Hall of Famer. And former head coach of the Houston Rockets, GM, too, before that with Minnesota. 713-780-3776. When we come back, we'll go around the NFL. Should you be fined by the league for giving your own player a little bit of a love tap? We discuss it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go around the league. Did you see Bruce Arians was fined $50,000 for giving his player a love tap during the wild card round the other day against the Eagles?
I said to you, it wasn't like a Woody Hayes, like, haul off, grab the face mask, and unload on the guy. and it's professional sports now. I mean, this is kind of what you signed up to do, and you're getting paid to do it. So the fact that he got $50,000 and he is appealing, and I hope they reduce that significantly, whether they publicize it or not. It wasn't that bad, and it also is professional football in the freaking playoffs. I cringe at a coach that even for a good play would have walked up and kind of smacked the back of a helmet and gone, great job, great job. I mean, do you get fined for that too?
I think we were talking about it off the air yesterday, and you're like, it's not a Woody Hayes moment.
Yeah, it's not a Woody Hayes moment, grabbing the face mask and hauling ass on the guy.
Or hitting the opposing player as he's running down the sideline. Right. Woody Hayes, or not Woody Hayes, Bruce Arians is 69 years old now. How much longer can he coach? How old can you be to coach in the new generation of the NFL?
It depends. I mean, we don't know what's in that freaking electronic purse he wears strapped to his chest. I mean, he might have like a pacemaker slash.
Come on, that's like, the channels.
Like superpower thing. Come on. Well, that's okay, but he's wearing channels. It on a MERS. Why can't he just have it attached to his belt like everybody else?
He might not be able to reach around there. I don't know. He wants to pick the
this. You just
the,
say reach around there?
Yeah, he doesn't want to reach around to the side of his pocket. He's got the belly, the old man belly, which I admire. I hope I have that whenever I'm his age.
Shame.
I said the old man belly. It's a term of endearment. I admire it. I want that at 69 years old. Absolutely. It's a sign of wealth of all things.
Is that cherry? Chapstick?
No, I don't do that.
You don't do lipstick?
No, I don't do lipstick.
All right, carry on with your
I do chapstick when it's cold out. My lips are chapped. That's what I do. Yeah, he did say he's going to fine it, or he's going to appeal the fine, which is great. Jim Harbaugh would take the Raiders job if he's interested. I think the Raiders would be absolutely crazy to keep Rich Bisaccia at the cost of losing one Jim Harbaugh.
I agree. A couple things on this. First of all, I was going to ask you guys, and especially Brendan, the Michigan honk, fan of all things Michigan. Do you think that's just positioning because he's working on an extension with Michigan to try and get the most out of Michigan and make sure that they're aware he's wanted? Or otherwise, you be careful what you throw out there because they might say, well, then go ahead, take it, dare you, and then you got to go. But, I mean, on the Bisaccia front, you're right. If you can get Jim Harbaugh instead of Rich Bisaccia, you have to do that deal. And I don't know if you guys caught this or not, but Deuce Staley, I believe it was on Twitter. And he was commenting on the picture of Bisaccia writing the handwritten thank you notes.
Yeah.
And Brandon, you might have to block me on this. I don't know if you can say this or not, but he said he responded to it and he goes, yep, that's Rich. A lot of times he wrote those notes for us too, even when he was doing special teams, and we loved him for it. Now, the dude can be a prick, but other than that, he still has some good times too when he does things like that. And I was like, wow, I guess that's the honesty you get out of Twitter.
I'll be honest with you. If you're a head coach and you're never a prick, you're not going to be very good at your job. Just flat out, that's it. Like, if you don't have a little bit of prick in you, you can't be good as a head coach in any sport.
So Greg Williams would be too prickly, but you need some of that.
I'm not sure there's a such thing as too prickly. You think Bill Belichick's too prickly?
I don't think Bill Saban's Belichick took prickly? It to Greg Williams level.
Probably not.
I don't think he put bounties out there and had especially with all the different hard knocks. Now that Greg Williams has zero filter.
That was a little unfair.
Bill has
though.
Some
I feel
filter.
Like I feel like Bounty Gate was a little bit extreme. Like he's not the only defensive coordinator in the world that said hurt the quarterback. Like, he's just not. That's been something that's going on forever in football.
I understand that, but like, the more you hear about Greg Williams on a day-to-day basis and stuff like that, I think he's like a porcupine. He's so prickly.
As far as the question that you asked about is Harbaugh like going around like looking for these offers to try to hold Michigan hostage, I don't believe so. I feel like Jim Harbaugh wants to be in the NFL again. He had great success in San Francisco. I think he'd have wonderful success again in the NFL. If I was a GM, I'd love to hire Jim Harbaugh. I feel like he's true and authentic about wanting to go back to the NFL.
I thought most of those rumors were not worth anything until this year. Last year, it kind of seemed like neither Michigan wanted Harbaugh back, nor did he want to go back. And he's making a lot less money this year than he had previously. If he was ever going to leave, this is the year for it to happen.
Yeah, and to the Raiders' point, too, like everybody said, Rich Bisaccia, he deserves another year. You got to bring him back for the way the season ended. Like, there's a such thing as tipping your cap to the guy and saying thank you so much for how you handled it, but you're not the best guy for this job. Ask yourself this question. Who would you want leading your team, Jim Harbaugh or Rich Bisaccia? I think that's a unanimous question. That's why you can't view these jobs. And I think Brendan's point that he had the other day about, like, is it good being a fraud NFL team? This would be a perfect example of that. If the Raiders get to the playoffs and they keep Rich Bisaccia, they would have been better off not going to the playoffs. You have to have the foresight to make an upgrade whenever the chances of making the upgrade are there. And Jim Harbaugh is an upgrade over Bisaccia. I'm sorry.
I think here's the other thing. He's never been more than a special teams coach. So, again, when we start scrutinizing potential candidates for their ability to lead men, their ability to be the CEO, let alone a coordinator, I think that he's not qualified to do this on a week-in, week-out, full-season basis. And I think that, like you said, he took a very unenviable position when Gruden had to step down or was fired.
And he did an admirable job, and he got him to the playoffs. And he did what a lot of people didn't think they were able to do, which was kind of overcome all of the things that they've been through. But I don't think that warrants him getting a long-term deal or a deal to be the full-time head coach of the football team, because it's a playoff-caliber football team.
You wouldn't hire a special teams coordinator if you felt he was the best man for the job. Like, John Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator. Like, I don't know why you would need an offense or defensive guy if you feel like the special teams guy is the best guy for the job.
As I keep telling you, because I need him to be involved in all aspects of the game. I need him to be able to have his finger on the pulse of every situation. I need to, and I also need him to not just lead the special teams, but I need him to have the respect and to be able to lead the best players in the locker room and the coaching staff and everybody around. I think there'd be too many people doing what we're doing, looking at him going, what have you really ever done to be in that position? And questioning him and second-guessing him instead of being all on board with him.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter, and I'm at Jeremy Branham. When we return, Charles Amenihue buried the Texans yesterday. How much stock are you putting into that? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN975, ESPN925.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.